not being around the
Love Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Hello everyone, this is Fran Lewis and this is MJ Network. And this is going to be really fantastic. We have the author of the ACAC Girls here, Chris Carlson. And she's going to tell us all about these girls, what they did, and how they helped during the war. So welcome to NJ Network again. I'm so happy you're here.
Oh, hi to you, and thank you for having me back. And hi to everybody out, your audience out there. So we're having a beautiful summer. I hope everybody else is, too.
We're having a very hot day. That's why the air conditioner is on here on full blast. Otherwise, I could not do this. As a matter of fact, it's a good thing it's on because the one in the living room was off for 2 weeks until I got the new one, and I lived in here. So give us a brief summary of the book, and tell us why you decided to highlight the ACAC girls.
You know, I like really good, I know it sounds funny probably, but I like really good war stories. And I loved a couple of the series, HBO, The Pacific and Band of Brothers. And I loved, you know, Saving Private Ryan and some of those movies. And I just had this, I don't know, I can't even explain where it came from, but I just had this desire to write a World War II love story. And I was watching the History Channel, and they were doing the Battle of Britain. And I was looking at that, and these poor RAF pilots were going up 5, 6, 7 times a day, just keep holding the line against the Germans and the Messerschmitts. And I said, you know, there's a story there. I'm going to make my romance based on one of these RAF pilots and the girl, and this is the girl, but I'm going to have her fall in love with an RAF pilot. And so I started looking at the jobs that women were doing. Like, you know, we had Rosie the Riveter and stuff. And I was looking initially for the girls that do the plotting. And you see them in the movies all the time. They have headsets and the long poles, and they're pushing little wooden soldiers across maps. And when I contacted the War Office in London, they kind of, you know, blew me off. Well, they didn't kind of. They did blow me off and wouldn't help me at all with the information. So as I was going through research, I saw here's a brand-new organization they formed, the War Office formed in England, called the ACAC Girls. There were two organizations, two teams. One was the ACAC Girls who worked anti-aircraft units, and the other one was an air transport women who took ferried every plane, war planes, cargo planes, they ferried planes from the factories to the airfields. So I started looking at the anti-aircraft girls because they worked with these gunners, and I mean several hundred were killed in the war. I mean, because they got scraped, they, like any other anti-aircraft unit, they were bombed, they were strafed, but they did a bang up job. And so I decided I'm going to have my girl do work with these brand new teams. And she's going to be really good. She loves it. And that team is right there within stone's throw of an RAF field. And, of course, she's going to fall in love with a pilot.
Well, what would it do without a little love and romance and, you know, friction here and now? That's good. So tell us how you created the first scene in the basement and how this sets the stage for the events to come.
Okay. I got to tell you, Fran, you're very, very faint. I heard you, but it was really hard to hear you.
Oh, you know, my phone is on speakerphone. Okay, I shut it off. That's why.
Okay. All right. We've known a number of English people because we've made so many trips to London and England in general. And I look at the films, the historical films of the bombing of London, and it's just such a devastating thing just to even see to see on film. And so I tried to recreate what it felt like. That's, I thought that to, I wanted to really jump off, start the story off with a, with something really big, a big event, and it was a big event for my lead my lead girl, my heroine, and I wanted to show how the what it must have felt like. I was trying to send that feel, what it felt like to just be that scared and to have that terror all around you with these bombs falling, and what it sounded like. And I started reading, like, you know, different accounts from people that were actually like that.
I know my uncle was part of that, so I understood what you were going through, that, what she went through. So tell us about Ava and Penny and Zoe, and what were their goals about? What were their goals? What did they really want to do as part of the war?
Well, Ava wanted to, she decided that after that, after she was caught in that London bombing, and she's originally from, she's originally from Kent area, and Kent was getting, Kent had a lot of airfields, so Kent was getting bombed a lot. And she was just saying, to, and like a lot of British people, I'm gonna fight for my country. And so she, when she started looking into, you know, what she could do, that, the ACAC, the anti-aircraft unit, she started off doing filing. She was a librarian. She started off doing office work. And then she was talking to her supervisor, her commanding officer, and he talked to her and said, I think you can do this. And she got really interested in it. And so she tested for it. She tested really well. Penny, all along, Penny wanted to do something exciting. Penny saw that women were actually flying planes from, I mean, they couldn't go into battle, but they flew these planes, Spitfires and Hurricanes and things. They're flying the planes to the airfields, and she just thought that was exciting. And there is no Zoe. There is no Zoe, so I don't know where that, what that character is.
That is so tense, though. So they need a test.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you again. Okay,
No,
what did you
say?
Okay,
now. They need a test, I know that. But how did their families react when they decided what they wanted to do? Did they support them?
Yeah. Yeah, they were scared for them, but they also understood that this is England. England knew that they had to hold the line. England was the last unconquered country left in Europe, and the Germans were going to do everything they could to defeat them. And their mother, Ava's mother, my heroine's mother, was scared for her. She was terribly scared for her because her husband, Ava's father, was so badly injured. He was gassed in World War One and so badly injured. And Penny's mom didn't like it at all, but, you know, she said, Penny was determined she was going to do it, so they supported him, you know.
I don't know how many other people would have. So she winds up in an area, but she really didn't want to be there. What area did she have her heart set on? And she wasn't, but she was great. And what is the training involved?
She was really never in an area she didn't want to be. She just, when she started off with the auxiliary people, the women's units, they initially, they had her doing paperwork, but then she was really good, and her, like I said, her commanding officer said she should test, and he thought that she would do good at, and she was excited about being on the anti-aircraft unit. There was never really a time that she didn't like what she was doing. And the testing is, they test you in normal ways. They test, but they test you in simulations, basically. So they've got you on these very sophisticated machines. They test you on sightings, like, because, you know, spotting, you're a spotter. They see how good you do on spotting. Like, at what distance can you, and can you figure out this special telescope that tells you, you know, that helps you identify whether it's an enemy plane or a friendly plane. And then the next thing is a predictor machine. The predictor machine will tell them height, speed, and various measurements that lets the gunners know how long the fuse should be, because they relay that information. And then they do simulations. They simulated them being in a bombing situation, and could they keep their wits about them?
I would have definitely not done that. No. I don't even like going on an airplane anymore. So what happens when she meets Chris, and how do they finally gel? Well, she's got his number loud and clear.
He had been shot down over the channel, and it took a while for them to get a rescue boat to him, and so he came down with pneumonia. And there was a field hospital at the airfield he was at, really wasn't the best place for him to get better. So they sent him to a different field hospital, and that field hospital was attached to the training camp that she was at. So she met him on the way to the mess hall, and he gave her a hard time because she walked in front of him and blah blah blah, and then he was behind her in line, and she said you're a wanker, and then the next day when she was going through some testing, some testing events, she didn't realize he was watching her, and he came up to her afterwards. He said, "You did really, really well," and she said, "I didn't know you were watching me." He said, "Well, you shouldn't know I was watching you. You should be paying attention to what you're doing," which is what was good about it. And they started talking, and he asked her out, and that's how they got safe. They finally, you know, kind of got together, and then he had some influence with his uncle, his air vice marshal, and he kind of had his uncle arrange for her to be assigned to an anti-aircraft unit near his airfield so that he could see her, continue seeing her.
Pays to know somebody, doesn't it? Doesn't always work, though. So tell us about Kitty and Dennis and what happened to them.
Oh, Kitty. Yeah, Kitty's her friend, and she's part of the anti-aircraft unit, and they're fine. I tried to give the impression in the book they did fall in love. They did want to get married, you know, and so they that in the end they're going to stay together. But they didn't marry right away because she didn't want, and she probably would have, from what I read, they would have moved her from that anti-aircraft unit. They would have put her inside. And she didn't want to leave the anti-aircraft unit, and he didn't like it because it was such a dangerous job, but he put up with it. But Dennis is a good friend of Chris's, and Dennis was injured. He was burned in a when his plane went down, so he's very sensitive about some scarring. But Kitty never ever was upset about where he was scarred and stuff, you know. And so she's just... She's just a really good foil for Ava because I get to use her to have Ava sound out about things.
You know, it's amazing. I don't think enough people know about these girls or what they did. Until you send me the thing for the book, I said, like, really? That's amazing. Because I don't think enough people
know
that they were out there.
Most people don't know. They do know that the women did a lot of men's jobs just like they did here. I mean, they know that from what they learned in history, and they know that the queen, the current queen, when she was a young woman, she actually joined the auxiliary, and she was trained as a mechanic. She used to drive army trucks and worked on army jeeps and stuff like that. But no, very few people know that women work the anti-aircraft units, and the ones that transported planes and stuff. And but there's a tremendous amount of information out there. On YouTube, I found several surviving interviews with women that actually worked those units, and they were so excited to talk about their time. And what their contribution to helping England, you know, not get conquered, that, you know, helping keep their country safe. Mm-hmm. And these women were so charming to listen to them, and they were so pleased that somebody wanted, that they got to share what their experience was, and it was just wonderful to listen to them.
That's amazing, because it's very hard sometimes to get people to talk about past experiences. I know, because with World War II, very few people want to talk about the camps or anything, and I've interviewed people like that. I'm going to interview somebody like that in August, as a matter of fact. That should be interesting. So when training is over, how did you create the battle scenes, and what research did you do? I did look up the ACAT girls. There's a lot of information out there, too. Really interesting.
Yeah, the battle scenes were wonderful to do. the Spitfires, which my pilot is flies a Spitfire. Spitfires all have cameras over the gun port, and so they actually every dogfight actually got filmed, and that's the way they actually confirm kills that certain pilots have. They'll turn around and say, you know, so and so pilot Jones, you know, got five Messerschmitts. Well, that's how they know, because they're the cameras on the gun port, and all that film, all those dogfights between actual Spitfires and Messerschmitts, all of that is archived. So I watched hours of actual dogfights that occurred. The same thing with the broadcast, the BBC broadcast of bombing of Coventry and the bombing of Pearl Harbor. BBC archived all those shows, so you can actually listen to the broadcast as it went out over the air. There's a couple of on Spitfires. There's a couple of actual like step by step takes you inside of the cockpit. You can go on YouTube and you are the pilot and everything. You're the pilot. Everything is seen through the pilot's eyes, and they walk you through. They set it up like they just like the camera's attached to you. You sit down in the cockpit, and the whole panel is in front of you, and they tell you this does this. So, and then I ran across an article by a former POW, an English pilot, RAF pilot, who was a POW in Germany when he got shot down, and then that's how I got the camp that Chris winds up as a POW in. That came from that man's article, what he talked about in that camp and how that camp was and how they got fed and the things that happened. That came from an actual pilot who was there.
I got the chills when I read that. I was so worried about him. I was just so glad when they finally got out. So tell us about the German fighter planes and how did the British hope to take them on? And what happened when lives are lost? How did they handle it? That's horrible.
Messerschmitts, there's lots of information on comparisons between Messerschmitts and Spitfires and Messerschmitts and Hawker Hurricanes, the British planes. Each plane, you know, the different planes had their different advantages. Some were faster, some were easier to maneuver. Messerschmitts had the speed. The Spitfire was easier to maneuver. It was smaller and could maneuver quicker. But the Messerschmitt actually had better speed, and the Messerschmitt had more guns
That's amazing.
And Rolls-Royce made the engines for them. Rolls-Royce is almost all the major industries in England, once the war started in 1939, were converted to war effort. So even lipstick tubes, metal lipstick tubes like Cody, the lipstick she liked to use was Cody. But their little tubes, they had to stop making the little metal tubes and converted to making bullets. You know, a Rolls-Royce stopped making car engines and made Spitfire engines.
So we have, I want this guy, the uncle. You need somebody like him. I had an Uncle Alex that was like him. And if you needed something done, you didn't ask how he got it done, but it did get done. I miss that. So tell us about his uncle and how he helps them get together more. Let me tell you, if I had a problem, like what I'm going through now, whatever it is, it would have been taken care of. So tell us about the uncle and why we all need one like him. He's great.
He has a lot of influence, but then he has, in a lot of ways, it's limited. He was able to help with getting her and Kitty, because, you know, Chris asked for his friend, Dennis. He was able to get the two women assigned to that, the closest anti-aircraft team for Chris. But... and of course when he starts courting her mother, her widowed mother and stuff, and when they get married, being an officer, a high ranking officer, he was able to, you know, bring food in from the officers' club. So all this rationing, you know, normally the rationing, they would have been a, kind of a sad little reception, but he was able to bring in mm-hmm. very nice meals. But other than that, once the girls became part of the anti-aircraft unit, mm-hmm. they became part of the Royal. They went from being part of the Air Force to being part of the artillery. And he is not an officer in the Royal Artillery.
That's scary. So what happens when she gets hurt? How does he help her?
He didn't help her.
He didn't help her, right?
She got some flak from, and it hit her in the hip, and she was hurt. Had that injury and stuff, and she's going to have a scar and stuff. But it's shrapnel. She got shrapnel in her hip when they were strafed. But she just, you know, if there was nothing he could do, she just went to a regular hospital and the military hospital nearby, and that was that. There's really she's still mobile. She still continued to work even though she had this little this minor injury.
So tell us how Penny becomes part of her family. How come, and where does she wind up?
Penny is, Penny's family, Penny's mother and grandmother stayed with Ava's mom out in her little, she has a small little, not farm, but small little place outside of Kent. Penny's father wanted them to get out of London because of the bombing. He knew it would continue, which it did. He stayed behind to continue working. He worked in the finance district, and so he continued working there. And Penny's mother and grandmother stayed with Ava's mother, and they, you know, got along well, and they each had their own little contribution to make. And Penny went on to go to the Auxiliary Auxiliary Air Transport. And the only time you really see Penny again is at the end when Ava's getting married and Penny is Penny is chatting up a pilot friend of Chris's, and you get the impression that may be a couple down the road one day.
That's so nice. So is this a standalone, or are you going to write some more about them? I have to ask that question.
I haven't decided. So far it's a standalone. If I write another I'm not sure if I'll write a book around Penny or if I write another World War II story that's a completely different World War II story. I haven't decided yet, but this one right now is a standalone. Currently I'm working on a joint book set in World War I with my girlfriend Jennifer Connor. It is loosely based on a female sculptor in World War I that changed who she was American, and she was in England during World War I, and she started seeing all these disfigured soldiers coming back, and she started trying to find a way to make masks for them to help them be able to function in society because they were so disfigured, and it kind of mask would help cover some of the disfigurement. And the hero, I'm writing the hero, and the hero is a copper set installer. He works with copper, and he's going to help her try to make these masks so they're more malleable and easier to wear and stuff. So that's set in World War I. That we're working on that together.
That sounds interesting. Then you'll just have to both come on together. That's all.
I think we can.
Yeah, I'm
do
doing
that.
As a matter of fact, I'm so loaded. I'm even doing two panels. One in September and one in October on crazy things that I could possibly think of. One is going to be, does the villain show remorse, and how do you get around that? And the other one is the beginning, middle, and end. How do you write the middle of your book so that friend doesn't fall asleep while you're reading it? She's reading it. It's got crazy. So Chris never writes to her, and why? And how does she deal with that when she has feelings for him?
She asked him outright in the one scene, and he says, you know, I'm not a writer. I wrote letters and I tore them up because I just thought they were just so stupid. They were just, you know, my everyday boring stuff. And she said, she told him, well, she said, write me anyway. You know, I don't care if it's boring. Yeah, it's just, I just want to hear from you. And so they, the only letter he really writes then is the one that that she's given after they think he's killed. He wrote a letter in case he got killed.
That's heartbreaking. I know, but I didn't think he would do that to me at the end of the book, though. He can't do that. So, when his plane goes down, how do you research what happens to a prisoner of war, and what does Ava think? And do they tell her the truth? Ever?
Well, the truth is that they think he's dead. They saw his plane go down. They saw the explosion of black smoke. They believe he's dead. She never believes it. She never believes that he's dead. And she holds on to the idea that he's not, that somehow he survived. The research I got from the prisoner of war was there's several articles I read from actual men who were prisoners of war, pilots. And then, like I said, those articles, they talked about what the camp was like, what they even talked about what they ate, what the Germans fed them, when they started getting starved, because when Germany was bombed really heavily towards the end of the war, they put those prisoners on starvation diets. And they were talking about different events, you know, and when I did just general research on prisoner of war camps, because the prisoner of war camps for pilots were better than regular prisoner of war camps. It was kind of like a pilot decency. And so a couple of those, when the camp got, the camp I wrote about actually existed, that's the longest article I read from a man that was in that camp. And when the Germans left it, it did get liberated by the Russians, but it didn't get liberated right away. And there's an event in there between an American colonel and the Russian officer that is a true event. It's documented in one of the articles I read.
So when the truth comes out, how does she deal with it? How does anybody deal with this?
Well, she confronts him because she sees him. When she goes after the end, as the war ends, she's going back. Her aunt had a bookstore in Kent, and she goes back and she's working with her aunt. And he comes in quietly, comes into the bookstore, sees her, but then gets cold feet because he's so badly scarred up. And he didn't. That's why he doesn't want to see her. Because his face is badly scarred because he got, you know, from the crash. And he leaves, but she sees him just as he's leaving, and she catches up to him, and she said, you know, and she talked to him, and she said, "Would you? I don't care. I don't care. You know, I don't care that you're not. You know, I love you. And if I was in a bad accident, would you leave me?" And he said, "No, you know, I wouldn't. No, I would never leave you." She said, "Why would you think I'd leave you?" So
that's sad. I know. And some people came back with one arm, one leg. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And it's hard at times. You know, I read about Germany. My grandmother was in a Polish concentration camp, and she told me stories about what happened to her. And that's why I understood that my aunt said to me, you know, she's not your grandmother. She's your step-grandmother. She never had children, my grandmother. I said, what did I know? I didn't realize that they did some x-rays on her, that she could never have children. It was, like, so frightening. So the part that I really love, because I love big bands, because I'm a music major, how could you include the big bands and wove it into the plot? That was interesting.
Oh, they had. Well, I was listening. I bought a double album from iTunes of Glenn Miller's hits, and a couple other songs from there. And as I was writing this story, I'd listen to that in the background, you know. And then I would just, you know, like that's how I incorporated it into the story, because I'd listen to it and I'd make sure that the song matched the year, you know, because if it was this, what would she be listening to at a pub? What would she be listening to here and there, you know? So, you know, like I said, I was like, whether it's Moonlight Serenade or you know.
Yeah, I love that song.
Begin the Begin, that sort of thing, you know.
Those are the first songs that my piano teacher made me play. Was Moonlight Sonata, Fear Elise, and all of those songs that you just mentioned. Because I was a concert pianist, and she made me learn all the hard stuff. So when I listen to the big bands, it's like it strikes it out. It's really cool. So you did a lot of interviews. What was the most compelling interview that you did with the living surviving RAF?
I didn't actually I myself. I watched, you know, people are dead now. I mean, the ones that are alive are maybe in their 90s, but there's from the early 2000s. There's a lot of there's a fair amount of interviews that were done on British television of the RAF pilots talking about Spitfires. They were doing a special on Spitfires and how much they loved that plane. And then they talked to some of the women, and the women were really cute, and they were so proud of what they did. And one of the women, she says, "I can still fit in my uniform," and she ran off and came back out in her uniform. She was adorable. So that, I just watched interviews of these BBC and British.
Well, you have a lot of fans out there that are Facebooking me and telling me they're listening. A whole bunch of people that are people that you know, Cheryl, Deb Pines, Marcia Casper Cook, a whole bunch of people are saying they're listening. Well, everybody listen, because this is really great, and you're going to learn a lot about history in this. You know, I wonder, seriously, I'm just adding this question off the top of my head, why it is that kids don't learn about this in school. Why they don't learn about other things, other areas. This would be really, I mean, see, if I was sitting in a history class and learning this, I probably wouldn't have fallen asleep with a boring teacher. And I'm an A student, and I was like, holy God, if I hear one more thing about the same thing, and they don't know the history. What they do is they take a social studies book, which I never did when I taught, and they read the book, and that's how they taught it. They didn't teach it from real life or articles or anything. So what would you think about kids learning about the ACAC girls and history in high school?
I think it would have been great. I think that they, you know, it helps if you can pull these kids in and bring it to life for them. Let them know, what did it feel like when bombs are falling all around you? What did it feel like to know that your country, you're the last stop before, you know, for this, some, you know, between Germany and you, you know, and if you're not out there, you're going to be wind up, you know, getting wiped out and starved and everything like that. And the determination, the courage and determination of the people, and I don't know why they don't teach it, but you know, I'm still shocked that there are people out there that don't believe the Holocaust occurred. You know, and it's like I don't even know where to begin with you if you think that never happened. 6 million people were dead, and you don't think it happened. You know,
I hear that a lot, and I say my grandmother lived it, my other grandmother lived it. My grandmother's five sisters lived it. My grandfather had to go to the underground, the Polish underground, to get my grandmother out. And the stories that she told me, I mean, that's why in my book, Silent Voices, the first one is my grandma Katie and her story and what happened to her. Because I felt that not enough people know. And the second one is my grandma, my other grandmother, and what happened to her after she left Russia. And the cruelty that she faced living with an aunt. People don't realize that. And maybe they need to show the videos, or maybe instead of all these junk programs on television about these families that do ridiculous things, maybe they need to focus on something in history a little bit more. Serious, that's just me. That's just the educator in me. What can I say? So, Wednesday, the author of The Last Seventh Infantry will be there, Charlie Finley. On the 28th, the author of, this is interesting, The Dead Tree Tales, somebody tried to poison an Angora tree with a specific chemical, and what happened, and it was all for money. On the 29th, just confirmed, Tess Gerritsen and Gary Raver, choose me. I'm excited. And on the 30th, I'm not sure. I'm waiting for the confirmation from the publicist for the man that wrote through a sober lens. He's an alcoholic, recovering alcoholic, and he tells his story through photography, through pictures that he made. I truly hope he does it because, yeah, it's interesting. And then we start back in August with Jeff Bond, somebody that we all know and love, Trinity House is going to do an inspirational one. And nothing not better than August 5th, Iris Johansson, The Bullet. I get so excited because I can't believe people like you and everybody else asked to be on my radio show, and I go like, oh, my God, I really do. This is fantastic. So how did you create the final scenes in this book? How did you tie it all together?
Well, once I had him in the had him in the camp and stuff, and I wanted him because he was so conscious about the scarring and everything like that. I didn't want him to go rushing back to her because these. Some of these men, like Dennis, was so conscientious about his burn scars. And so I just, and as, after spending several years in a prisoner of war camp, I didn't believe that he would just walk out of there and just be A-okay, you know, because he went through some horrible, as a prisoner, he went through horrible things. And there has to be some kind of, suddenly you come back into the real world, and you're back with your family, your parents, and his parents, and he's back with their cook, and their cook's making him a meal. But this isn't—he's been in dire straits for the last 3 years. So there's some time that I wanted to give him time to get his head right, to get back and say to get back into what's normal anymore for him. So that's when I let him go to Scotland, let him be by himself, let him kind of gather his thoughts, gather his emotions. He just goes fishing, he's by himself, and then he goes at this little quiet inn. And then when he finally musters the courage to decide to face her, and then he chickens out, but that's when she sees him walking away. And I never let her believe that he was dead. And so when he's walking away, she's like worried. What, you are not walking away from me. You are telling me what happened, and because I never ever stopped believing in you. And so I wanted to give her that power, and to give him permission to be hesitant, and she's okay, you stop being hesitant now. I'm here, you're here, we're going to have this life. We've been fighting for this enemy for 5 years, and now we have our chance to live, you know?
Well, that's why I said, is there a sequel? Because I would be wondering, how are they doing now that the war is over? What is their real life? Is he able to deal with how he is, or does he revert back? Does he need help? Does he need counseling? That's why I'm wondering. That's just me.
Yeah, I don't know if I will go down that road with them again or not. If I have them in another book, they would be the support characters, and I'd let somebody else be the hero.
Yeah.
Right. Book.
Well, which other characters didn't we talk about besides the one that's got my name, Anne Franny?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Which other characters do you want to share before we end, especially the one with my name, Anne Franny? She's got to be wonderful.
I did. This is not the same series, but I thought I would let your audience know. I have the Bloodstone series because we did an interview on my last book, the Bloodstone book, my Victorian detective. That book, the last one, A Venomous Love, just won an international first place award for from Chanticleer. It's a SIBA award, and it's for suspense thriller category. So I'm very happy. I was very, very – I had a lot of competition. I was really kind of surprised that I got first place on that because I didn't really think that – I thought, oh, my chances are pretty slim. So I was really proud of that. That just happened a week ago.
I saw that. I think I commented or something on there. I saw that on Facebook. I don't go on too often, and I don't comment about anything other than books and stuff because I have to be careful. But it's great when people win and when people write things. Well, my book, everybody, I got to tell you, Saturday, June 26th, Population Zero comes out on Amazon. And
congratulations.
Yeah, I've gotten some mixed thoughts about it. It's a world without people. And then I invite a dead person to come back and experience the horror that I created. And the reason is because people are not walking out at times to look at the sun, appreciate the water, appreciate what we have in life. Instead, I don't like racism. I don't like hate. I like people to walk out and say, good morning, how are you doing? They don't do that anymore. Some communities require that you wear masks and some don't. Some stores, believe it or not, require that you don't have to wear them anymore. I walk in anyway because I'm afraid. I'm not going to take a chance. So I wrote Population Zero. Basically, it's a world without people. I invited 9 people to come back and experience my horror and tell you whether they want to live in that. And I invited 1 man to come back and experience them all. And I've actually come up with an idea for a sequel that people might not like. And I think it's going to be called Population Zero. Some people wear back or something like that, and tell how people actually live in the worlds I created and see if they can get along better. That was my wild idea.
Interesting. I should tell you that I just the audio of Act Act Girls just got released on audio.com.
Oh, nice.
So that just came out. Yeah. So
that is nice. That is great. I've never done an audio for my book because basically the characters are dead, telling the story.
Huh?
So, yeah, the faces behind the stones, usually it's a dead person telling how they got there. So I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't feel comfortable having a dead person tell a story. What can I say? So,
well, I didn't do the narration. Somebody else did. Another woman, different person. I don't do the narration. Somebody else does them.
Yeah, I've listened to some audio books, and I've read the book, and I'm going like, that doesn't make sense because the person doesn't fit the character. So if Ava could talk to the public or a school child now, what would she tell them about being an ACAC girl? And what if they got, you know, they don't have that now. Do they have women fighter pilots anymore?
Oh, they have women fighter pilots now, yeah.
Yeah.
But
they do, right?
Because they've had that. There's a couple of the women fighter pilots. Actually have ran for office and stuff like that. There's a woman fighter, F-18 pilot ran for Senate, you know, in Kentucky.
Mm.
There's a woman that got shot down in a fighter helicopter. She ran in Texas. And in fact, I forget her name, but when people ask her, she has some tattoos, and people ask her about her tattoos, and she said the tattoos actually cover up scars from when I got shot down. And she was she continued to shoot. She was firing as their plane was going down. They even have one of the Arab countries has some female fighter pilots.
That is amazing. But if Ava was alive, if she was a real person, would she encourage girls to go into that field?
I think she
would.
I mean,
you have to have a certain personality for that. I know that.
I think she would. I think she'd encourage women to you know, if you're interested in it, then try it. Try to be it. Try to do it. I think Ava's of the philosophy, there's nothing that we can't do if you, you know. We can fly planes. We can shoot, you know. Like she even tells one of the guys insults the women and says,
yeah.
I can look in the sky and identify a plane as well as any man. I can figure out how long the fuse is going to be, you know, and so that I think she would be a big cheerleader for women that want to do interesting different things.
Well, she went through this thing, and do the guys that are in charge, do they treat the women the same way they treated the men that were fighting, were fighter pilots? Or did they have to fight to be recognized?
I think, well, she wasn't a fighter pilot. She was an anti-aircraft unit.
Yeah.
But the men that are doing the training themselves, the men that are actually trying to show them what they need to do, what they need to know, they took it seriously. They treated them with seriousness. But, like, you've got to remember, think of the times, and even now, now there are men that talk down to women and, you know, are condescending to women. And there were some pilots that were very condescending in the book. There's one or two pilots that are very condescending to the women, like, you know, because that's just the way the times and the way some people are.
Yeah, it bothers me
everybody treated them with great respect. I don't think it would have been true to the time.
Well, they deserve it. I'm gonna tell you, I drive through my area, and I see that this construction. I won't tell you which company is doing it, and I know that they know you have to start at the bottom. But my heart goes out to these girls sailing with a pole that says slow and stop for 10 hours a day. And I'm looking at them like, I feel so bad for them. It's not that they can't do the job. It's just that they're starting at the bottom. And I'm going like, they need to be treated a lot better. They need to move up a little faster. And every single day, this poor girl is standing there in 110-degree weather, probably getting paid a lot of money, to just stand with a sign that says stop and slow. The traffic pattern around here is horrendous. It could take you an hour to get down the block. But I just feel women deserve respect. And I noticed that even in the police department, they complain that you don't always get that. You know that better than anyone else because you're not a police detective. It's hard. Sometimes you have to earn it, I guess. And yet sometimes, you know, the police, they would never make a woman police chief, would they? I don't think. Or maybe they would.
Oh, you've got several that have been chiefs. Seattle had two female chiefs. You've got Val Demings in Florida was a chief of police in Orlando.
Mm.
So you've got some places that do it, but overall it's usually a good old boy network still.
Okay, so who was Carl in this book? I have the book in front of me. Who was Carl and what was his role as far as with Chris?
Carl?
Carl, yeah.
There's no Carl.
K-A-R-L. It says with Carl followed his armload of wood chunks he torn from the German latrine. No, maybe? I'm just looking at...
Oh, okay, yeah, all right, yeah, I forgot for a minute. Yeah. That's in the prisoner of war camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's in the prisoner of war camp, and the prisoner of war camp had Allied pilots, had British, Canadian, and American pilots, and when the Germans knew that the Russians were just outside the camp, were headed that way, so the German guards all left. And once the German guards left, the several prisoners started gathering stuff, you know, and they found some potatoes that got left behind, and these guys were starving. And so, you know, you got one, there were two guys, one American, one Canadian, that actually spoke German. They came from German families, so they understood it. So they knew that the guards were leaving. They knew the Russians were on the way. But they started gathering up, when they found the bag of potatoes, they started gathering up stuff to start a bonfire so they could cook the potatoes. They were hungry. They were going to eat.
That is scary. That is really scary because you have to make do with what you have. I know my grandmother told me they barely fed them. And she looked like some kind of skeleton when she came out. It's horrible. Plus the fact that they were doing experiments on them is even worse.
The guy that one of the prisoners' articles that I wrote the guy that was in the camp that I wrote about, he said in a matter of months he had lost 30 pounds.
Oh God!
You know.
How do you keep? With one final question before we ask where we can find out about you. How does somebody in a prison of war keep their sanity? How do the rest of them come out? Not. Brain, you know, I'm sure they have mental problems, but how do they come out being somewhat sane? How do you keep your mind?
You know, I don't know, and I think that's why, you know, we so many guys suffer from PTSD. So many guys have nightmares afterwards and stuff, and some of them, their nightmares last for all their lives. I don't know. I can't. I really don't know how they can actually learn to function again. You know, without that, they have to leave permanent scars. And you know, there are 22 veterans. 22 veterans commit suicide every day. So
yeah,
some of them never recover.
I know. My nephew is a staff sergeant in the Army. He's kind of unique, I guess. He's got this unusual personality. And I wonder sometimes if he doesn't suffer from PTSD just from the training that he had. Because he almost didn't survive basic training, but he did after a while. And from when I listened, you know, to them talk, it's scary. I don't know why. I know that people want to enter the Army for education and stuff like that, but I often wonder why they want to enlist and if they're able to do it. And what happens if somebody can't do it? They don't throw them out? That's
what
worries me.
Yeah, well, they just get discharged out or something like that.
Yeah.
If Ava had failed in the training, the ACAC training, if she had failed in that, they would have just sent her back to doing the office work and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They would have found another assignment for those girls that didn't make it through the training.
So now we know you're working on a book that's with someone else. Are you working on anything else? And where can everybody find out about you and your work?
You can go to chriscarlson.com. That's my website. I have trailers, book trailers there. I have excerpts there from every book. There's teasers there. There's that sort of thing. I have some book boards on Pinterest where if I got to do my Dreamcast, that sort of thing. All my books are for sale. All my books are in audio, if you have Spanish people in your audience, I have several that have been translated into Spanish and Portuguese. And I'm on all the major sales sites. I'm on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iTunes. So you can always get my books there. I don't have any appearances upcoming yet, but mm-hmm. I usually, if you watch my Facebook page, you can usually see where I'm going to appear. If I'm on tour, I just came off a blog tour, and I'll probably be going on a 1-day flash tour to announce the audio book, and that will probably be coming up in the next month or so.
Yeah, I'm doing a month with Partners in Crime in August. This is unreal. Because it's horror, and because I review for them, but I was upset that they didn't take my last one. They're taking this one. Isabella Blackthorne is giving me a tour in December. It's called The Tea Break. We'll see it's different. Yeah, I know. And I was honored because I was really upset that they didn't take What If. And this one they took because they said I'm their number one favorite reviewer in the whole universe. I said, if that's the case, then just tell me what you think. And no, they read it. They like it. So it's going to be like small. They do like small novellas. This is 76 pages, but it's coming out on Saturday. And Saturday, it comes out in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce. It's the day it's not a happy day. So I decided to do something that she would be proud of, because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be doing this. She said I should do a radio. She's the one that told me to write books, and I said, you're going to be sorry, because my first book, My Name is Bertha, is all about growing up in the Bronx together. So thank you so much. You went up for panels when I create more in October and November?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to do it,
and I'm sure my partner, Jennifer Connor, would love to do it, too. So
send me something. What does she write? What books does she write? How come I don't know her?
She does a lot of romances. This is the first one we've ever done together. And she does that. She's, I'm trying to think of the name of her series. I can't think of really off the top of my head the name of her series. But, yeah, she does a lot of short stories.
Oh, nice.
And novellas. Yeah.
Novellas are my favorite.
In fact, you mentioned her. She just did a guest spot with Marcia Cook.
Yeah, I didn't know what Marcia was doing. I know she had Vincent Zandri and Dick Belsky. And Vincent is going to be doing the panel in September with John Lansing and David McAuliffe and Charles Sulzberg. And then in October, I've got Dick Belsky and Brian Silverman and a few other people that have volunteered to do this for me. And that's what we're going to talk about in October. Vincent, what we want to talk about, beginning, middle, and end. And in October, we're going to talk about your psychological, Dennis Palumbo, because he's my psychotherapist person. We're going to talk about how does a criminal decide on what they're going to do? How does the violence and what psychological problems does this person have that he brings to the story? It should be fun. Interesting?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't say I was going to do something boring. What can I say? I have a few more ideas of things that I've never done. But I want to thank you so much, and I'm glad you're okay. And I will let you know if and when I decide to do something in October. But everybody, it's a beautiful day outside. Have a great day, but stay safe. Be smart. When you go into a store, beware of, people that don't wear masks. That's up to you. But me, I'd rather be safe and wear a mask to go in because you don't know who's vaccinated and who's not. So everybody stay safe. Chris, thank you so much. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.